You're listening to Doing Law Differently. Join me, Lucy Dickens, as I explore how the world's most progressive legal service providers are doing law differently. Hello, welcome back to the Doing Law Differently podcast. I'm your host, Lucy Dickens. I think I have mentioned before that often when I interview guests on the podcast, I'm speaking to them for the first time. Basically, what I do is I look for interesting looking people and law firms online, and then I get in touch and ask them if they're willing to open up about some of the behind the scenes of their firm. Of course, like any good interviewer, I do some research and preparation in advance, but I don't really have any preconceived ideas about where an interview will go, or what we'll talk about, and what kind of information the guest will share. I do try hard to focus on the behind the scenes stuff. So mostly I'm talking to them about information that they might not have published on their website or in other places on the internet. So it really is a discovery exercise to see what we can all learn about the behind the scenes of doing law differently. In today's episode, I spoke to Sean King of Proximity, who I came across when I saw Proximity's name listed as a finalist in six categories in the recent Lawyers Weekly Australian Law Awards. And seeing their name six times in one place, it was very clear to me that they had something to share and that there was a good chance that there was quite a lot that they were doing differently and that we could all learn from them. So I reached out, I got in touch with Sean King, a director at Proximity, and asked him if he'd join us on the podcast to share some more about what they're doing. Now, Proximity are a professional services business, and they provide legal, commercial, and consulting services to the government and regulated industry sectors. Sean himself is highly regarded by his clients as a strategic advisor and lawyer to the government, technology, utility, and non-profit sectors. In the episode, we talk about Proximity's foundations, and I find it really interesting to hear from Sean how he and his co-director, James, started their firm really with a blank canvas. They both had big law backgrounds, and they really started by asking what they wanted to bring with them and what they wanted to leave behind. Sean also gives us an insight into Proximity's multidisciplinary team and their approach to professional services. And we talk about the types of skills that they value on their team and how they approach performance. And then you'll hear me get very excited when we start to talk about systems and processes, and especially when we talk about products. Productized services are one of the key components to the way that I do law differently, and they are a big part of the book that I'm writing, hoping to release by the end of this year. So it was really interesting to hear Sean's approach to this and to compare and contrast with him. And this is what I mean about partly the unknown about the people who I'm speaking to. I didn't know that we would end up having a really interesting conversation about legal service products. So it just goes to show what kind of exciting things we can discover about these different businesses when we dig a little bit deeper. Now, before I hit play, I want to ask you to do me one favour. If you like the podcast, and especially if you're a regular listener, please share the episode with your colleagues who you think will love it too. Also, come and connect with me on LinkedIn. I've been having some really interesting conversations on there about doing law differently and the future of law, and I'd love you to join in on those. Now, let's press play on Sean King of Proximity on the Doing Law Differently podcast. Enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, Sean.
Thanks, Lucy. Looking forward to it.
Me too. And just like I said to you just before we hit record, I don't know a massive amount about Proximity other than what I've read online and a few questions that you answered for me before we got started with the interview. So I'm really quite keen to explore and to learn some more about the behind the scenes of your business. I think the thing that drew me to you most, or perhaps first, because once I started digging a bit more, there were quite a lot of things that I thought were quite interesting about your business, but it started with the multidisciplinary approach that you have on your team. And I would love to start this conversation by asking you to tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks. When we first set up Proximity, which was in 2011, it was myself and my co-director, James Dunn. We'd both been working in one of the big global law firms, which, you know, we loved. We're doing lots of really interesting work. But I think we could see that on the projects we were involved with, there was a lot of other important aspects to the project, and it wasn't just about the legal issues. And we had a real interest in personally being involved in helping some of those projects or those matters work through the non-legal issues. And that was not sort of really an option that the firm that we were at, and we couldn't find a sort of firm that was doing that in the way that we wanted to. So we started our own firm to be able to do that. And in the early days, it was really about lawyers like ourselves and the people who joined the team who had that interest in playing a broader role. So for our commercial lawyers on a project, that would often be doing a broader amount of commercial work, maybe on the sort of, you know, understanding the finance sort of side of the deal or understanding the sort of procurement aspects, because we do a lot of government work. For our public law lawyers, that was maybe being more involved in the program or the policy development side of things, not just the sort of statutory interpretation side. So that in the early days, it was really sort of lawyers who wanted to bring their skills to a broader range of the challenges that were facing their clients. Mm. But over time, that's really evolved to now our legal and commercial and consulting, which are our sort of three services, having a range of lawyers, but discipline specialists in each of those areas. Yeah, and it's been great to be sort of a part of a firm that a professional services firm that has, you know, legal as a part of it, but is equally interested in the kind of commercial and consulting aspects.
And is much broader than law. I want to ask you some more about those other two aspects, but before I do, I just want to take you back and ask you about this transition. So when you left big law, how much of traditional big law firm came with you? What did you leave behind? And were these decisions about how starting the new firm and what it was going to look like in terms of what was to come and what was to stay, were those decisions that you made consciously, as in did you sit down and say, this is what we don't like and this is what we're going to do differently? Or is it something that just evolved over time as the business grew?
A bit of both of those, but the primary one was sort of having that opportunity with the blank canvas to really design what you want in a firm. That's sort of one of the luxuries of being a newer firm. So you have the disadvantage of not having the sort of 150 years of history necessarily, or maybe the sort of brand recognition when you're sort of first in the market. But on the positive side, you have that ability to say, what exactly do we want this organization to be? So we went through that really sort of consciously, and some of the things that we sort of took with us were around the type of work. So we wanted to continue to work on sort of big projects and be a real sort of, even though we're a small business, be sort of working on large pieces of work for the large government and corporate clients that we'd been working for. So we wanted to maintain that and the sort of the quality of the services and the sort of research and all those side of things. But we wanted to design a different workplace experience. So we didn't want to sort of have the billable targets and personal budgets, because we thought that didn't necessarily drive the best behaviours for either staff or for clients. So there are some of the things we left behind, and we really wanted to have this multidisciplinary focus. So yeah, we did get the luxury of saying, what do we want this organisation to be? And spent a lot of time sort of thinking about that before we sort of launched into things. But you naturally have to learn some of it as you go. So, you know, you start with an idea, and then I think another sort of advantage of being an emerging or growing business is that you have that sort of flexibility to pivot quickly, and you can sort of try things, you know, say, oh, well, we like that and we're going to do more of it, or we're going to sort of double down on that. And other things you say, well, we gave that a go, but we think we could do it even better, and you move on.
Yeah, you definitely get the ability to be really agile and try things and fail fast. That's what people talk about, isn't it? And you really do get the opportunity to start from scratch, like you say, and really think about what is it that we want this business to look like? And that's so empowering. I work with a lot of lawyers who find themselves in a position like yours, either where they are about to start a new business or they have been running a business, but something's not quite right. And they have this revelation that actually this is my law firm and I get to do things my way and I don't have to do it the way that things have always been done if that doesn't suit me. And whenever people have that kind of penny drop moment, it is really empowering to realize you've got a blank slate and you can reinvent the wheel if you want to. You can do things on your terms, which is clearly what you've done in many different areas of your business. But on the one that I've started and I haven't managed to get to yet because you've given me too many other really interesting ideas, is the commercial and the consulting arms of the business. So tell me about those. What do those do? Well, there's three, isn't there? There's legal, commercial and consulting. Tell us about those.
Yeah. So on the legal side, I say our sort of primary client is government, and that's largely because we started our sort of head office originally in Canberra. So it's kind of the types of areas of law that government and large corporates need a lot of. So public law, commercial law, litigation and dispute resolution, property environment law, those sort of areas. On the consulting side of our business, that's around corporate governance, around business transformation, reviews and investigation. So we'll often get asked to come in and look at, you know, the way a particular part of a business or a function of a business is running. And that's looking at everything from, does it have the right people? Are those people getting the right training? Are the tools and templates available to the people doing that type of work, the right tools and templates? You know, what are the business processes and mapping out those business processes and looking for process improvement? So that's the consulting side. On the commercial side, it's a lot of work around developing business cases, cost modeling, project and program management. In government, probity is a big issue. So that's part of it. Procurement and tendering, vendor management. So that's the kind of commercial sphere of things. So we have those three service lines, but we are very conscious not to have them as individual teams. So I guess one of the advantages of having a corporate setup is that we don't have the partnership structure necessarily where a partner says, this is my practice and this is my team and this is my client. It's all about a sort of whole of proximity view of the world. And for that reason, we have people that have specialization in each of our areas, legal, consulting, commercial, and the sort of sub areas or sub services within that. But we don't sort of, people don't sit in a particular team as such. So when a job comes in, we have what we call a sort of best for project resourcing model, which says what are the skills or the collection of skills and the attributes required for this particular job? And then we build the team around that. So that's looking at skills, capacity, understanding of that client. And so a team will form to do that particular project. And then the next project might require a collection of people with different attributes. So people work sort of very fluidly rather than more just, you know, I work for that partner and that partner does this type of work and therefore that's the type of work I do. So we do each of the legal, commercial and consulting types of work, but I guess some of the projects that really suit us are the projects that are at the intersection of all of those or require a collection of skills across each of those different areas.
And I can see how they would. I mean, there's a lot of crossover between the types of things that, well, the examples that you just gave of the types of work within each of those arms of the business, but they relate so well to each other. I mean, if you're giving some advice to a business about their commercial aspects of their business, it makes sense to also look at, well, how are your people? What's going on with your business processes? What about the corporate governance? Those things are so closely related. And the way you explain it, it just sounds obvious. Why haven't lawyers always been doing this? Because it's such a way to value add. Another benefit that I see, though, is how doing those things for other people will help you to do them within your business as well. I always find that when I'm doing something within my business is one thing, but then when you go and teach that to somebody else or you go and consult or you go and help somebody else to do what you've done within your business, you get a completely different perspective that you can then bring back into your business. And it's just this continual improvement cycle. It's like when you go from the student to the teacher, it's that process. Have you seen that in proximity as well? You're nodding and smiling, so I'm taking that as a yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, spot on. And I was thinking about, you know, in the context of, you know, I talked about business process mapping and sort of looking for efficiency in processes as being sort of one of the services we do for our clients. But because of that, you know, we've got one of our principal advisors, John Jeston, who's a sort of real expert in that area, does that on a sort of regular basis for us. So, you know, mapping out our processes and making sure that we've got good governance around them and all of them as efficient as they could be and the systems we have around them. And as a sort of growing business, which we have been, and a quickly growing business, the business changes a lot from year to year. And so you kind of need to constantly be revisiting those things and saying, well, that process that worked for us last year, is that still as good as it could be for the firm that we are this year? And what's the new technology that might support that? And having a constant look at that. So you're absolutely right. It's great to have that, to be able to have that sort of extended offering to clients, but it also is fantastic to be able to sort of use those same skills internally to make sure the business is as good as it can be.
And that's exactly one of the reasons why I think we don't need to be worried about whether there's going to be jobs for us in the future, because nothing stands still. It's constantly changing. And the process is a great example of this. In my firm, I'm responsible for our workflow. I love systems and processes. And I remember the first time I set up this workflow for our conveyancing, I thought, what's going to happen at the end of this? What am I going to do next? And clearly that was so naive. naive of me to think that I was going to get to the end and it was going to be done and I was going to have nothing left to do. Because of course, as you know, that's not how it works at all, because there are always improvements to be made and there's always changes to client needs and there's changes to technology, and it's just a constantly evolving process.
Spot on. I think automation and artificial intelligence and all those things might change, you know, aspects of our role, but it certainly isn't going to make lawyers or any other professionals, you know, at the top we have in our business redundant. But what it does require is people who sort of flexibility then becomes a key trait in people, because the way you do things and your exact role in a particular piece of advice or transaction changes. And so you need to be able to move with that, be able to sort of learn and adapt to new systems so that you are at that sort of leading edge, but also bring that sort of analytical skills and the thinking and the human touch, which is always going to be important in the type of work that we do.
I agree. Speaking of humans, you've already touched on your culture. And one of the things you mentioned is that you left behind billable targets and personal budgets. I'd like to explore culture. I always think that's an interesting conversation, especially with more modern firms and especially with people who have founders who have come from traditional law and who have decided what you're going to keep and what's going to stay behind. So you've already identified billable targets as something that's gone. Have you replaced them? What have you replaced them with? And how are you measuring and managing performance? Because that's always a concern people have, is if I'm not recording billable targets or not tracking billable targets, how am I going to know if my staff are working? What do you say to that one?
Yeah, I guess we've replaced them with having career and wellbeing managers or supervisors who are close to the staff that they're working with and understand the contributions that those staff are making. So we don't have, it's not a sort of replacement set of metrics. We have a sort of series of attributes that we sort of look for in of all of our staff and people. You know, we have sort of performance conversations around those and career planning and progression discussions like you would, but we just don't feel like you need the billable targets or the number of billable hours as someone has done in order to be able to have sort of a meaningful discussion around performance. And we feel like the good managers will know innately, and if they're working closely with staff, the level of performance. And I guess one of the big things for us is that we feel like the part of the going away from the billable targets was because of the sort of stress that that can create as an employee, because then it makes it, it can be a stressful profession when you're busy because you're under the pump and you've got all these client expectations to meet, but then it can be stressful when what should be a kind of the sort of bit of a wind down time becomes stressful because then you're worried that you're not meeting budget that month or targets that month.
Yeah,
so there was a kind of well-being reason for going away from it. But the other was a business reason, because we knew that at times the greatest contribution that someone could make was not to doing billable client work. It was to setting up a new system, to give the example that you were working on. You know, it takes time to manage a workflow, but that might pay dividends over, you know, years and years into the future. It takes time to mentor people, to train people. We have, you know, as part of our service delivery methods, we have three of them, one on-site embedded in with clients and project teams, advisory in a sort of more traditional sense, and then products, which is developing a product that can solve the common problems that we see our clients having. Now, that might take a 6-month investment to develop that product, but if you can have recurring income for that by being able to license that or have subscription fees to that product, you know, for the next 5 years with a client, then that might be a far better investment of that person's time than the billable hours. But the billable hours always forces you back to what client work have I done today? Have I, you know, met that X number of hours that sort of target is? So for both a kind of employee cultural reason we did it, but there's also an underlying business reason. It's the combination of both of those that drove us to go away from the targets.
Have you got your hands on my new ebook? It's filled with 80 short, sharp, and practical tips to help you firm your foundations, sort your strategy, and optimize your operations so that you can modernize your law firm. Get your copy at lucydickens.com.au/ebook. I see that myself every day. In fact, just in the last couple of weeks, I've recognized for me personally that I'm spending a lot of time really focused on my work. I do project planning in a 3-month block, and I've just started the 3-month kind of project plan. And so I've got this brand new set of goals, and I'm really motivated and excited to do all these things in our business. And I've been so focused on this that I haven't been spending time with our people. And I recognized it. And it's like you say, it's really important to be conscious of the things that aren't so tangible, but are really, really important in business. And for me, one of the things I've not been doing enough of is just spending time with staff and having those mentoring conversations, or even just having casual, nothing to do with work conversations, because I've just so focused on what I'm doing. And all of what you said really goes to that point. We can't measure. Not everything that is required for a successful business can be measured. You can't measure how necessarily, or perhaps not easily, how important those conversations are, but it's a gut feel, much like the way that you say your career people approach their performance of reviews with their staff, is you just have a feeling for whether this person is good for my business or not.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's also something positive about coming from a starting point that you assume all your people, if you've recruited well, are doing the right things and the best things. So you start from that sort of positive side of it. And the other part, I think, is if you try and put a really sort of detailed framework around it, then you probably ask people to be lots of different things at all times, but it's not reasonable to expect that. You know, people are going to have different skills and attributes, and we sort of as a business really think you're best playing to people's skills. So if someone's sort of real skill and passion and interest is in doing the client work, that's great. But if they're interested in building out your templates, or if they're interested in mentoring, or if they're interested in other parts of the business, then you want them to sort of business development, for example, you want them to put their energy into that, because if that's where their interest and skills line, then that'll align with your business. Whereas if you say, you know, I need you to be 5 parts technical lawyer for 6.5 hours a day, and then I want you to be 1 part mentor, you're not going to do that. You're just going to treat everyone as though they've got the same collection of skills. And that's not really in the person's interest, because people aren't going to enjoy doing the things that they know are not their strengths or interests. But it's not necessarily in the business one, because when people are motivated, they'll always bring their best. And so we feel that having a more sort of flexible sort of framework that says, what's your contribution, and a bit more of that sort of gut feel test is a good way to go, because it gives you the ability to direct people to where their sort of interests and passions and therefore their sort of skills and best outputs for.
Yeah, I love it. It sounds like you have a very similar management approach to me. That's exactly the approach I take as well. Is the starting point is actually, what are you interested in, and where are your strengths, and where do you see your career going? And then it's working out how we can align the business goals and the individual goals, and then everybody wins. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. One of the things I'm interested in learning more about is your products. You've mentioned those just in the previous comment, in terms of having staff to develop products. And I know you have technology products and services products. Tell me about these.
Yeah, so as you say, there's sort of the two types of products there. And so an example of a sort of technology product that we have is our Optics product, which is a procurement analytics tool. So again, our clients, largely being sort of very large clients, are spending, you know, significant amounts of money on a whole range of goods and services, but often without having a lot of sort of insights into what the categories of that spending are going to be, or where they might have lots and lots of different contracts with the same vendor that they could bundle up and therefore get a, you know, a greater discount on, or to be able to do the planning around what's the order in which certain contracts are expiring. They often don't have the sort of real visibility into that, or if they do, it requires a sort of business analyst to sort of drag through the data for, you know, several days to sort of pull it together. So we noticed that a lot of our clients were having that as a sort of repeat challenge, and we could have kept just supplying BAs to do that, but we realized that part of the reason was that if you had the right tool set, you know, the right sort of business intelligence tool set, they could quickly drill down and answer those common questions that they want answered. So we developed the Optics tool to be able to give those insights. And so that's an example of more a sort of technology-based product. But a lot of our products are more a kind of collection of services. So on the services side, for example, one of the common problems we saw clients having was with the way that, again, being large organizations, that they do delegations and authorizations. So who's authorized to make certain decisions, whether that's spending decisions or whether that's a decision or power granted under some piece of legislation for our government clients. And they need to be able to know who has those powers and how and what enables them to exercise those. But we found that for a lot of our clients, they would ask us to come in. We would do a sort of a project, which was a combination of legal and consulting work, to work all of that out and build that delegations and authorizations register. But then over time, like can often happen, that would sort of atrophy and they would become out of date and people would leave and it wouldn't get updated and new powers would be granted under legislation and that wouldn't be reflected. And so then 5 years later, we'd be brought back in to have a sort of another go at that. And we realized that if we instead package that up as more of a sort of subscription model service where clients could just pay and we would always keep it in date for them. And when legislation changes, we would go proactively to them, say, you need to do this. And then we would have the platform on which you record that. Was a better way to go. And so for some of these, they're sort of, it's just about making the service you would otherwise be supplying more readily available, more consumable for clients. So in some ways, those services clients are more just a repackaging or taking what you know is the common 80 or 90%. And so then the bespoke or the sort of additional thinking is only the 10%, which is obviously a far less expensive way to clients to buy because you've invested up front in the base offering that addresses all the common issues of clients. And then it's only that sort of 10% customization to meet what their specific needs might be.
I'll be honest with you and admit that I didn't realize quite how much our business models had in common until kind of about right now, which is fascinating. It's really interesting. You say that the clients are able to save money by buying your products and then minimizing the amount of bespoke work they need. But I'm going to hazard a guess here, but given what we've spoken about in terms of systems and processes and products and how aligned our business models seem to be, that you also save a hell of a lot of money in making your service provision more effective and efficient. I'm going to guess through systems and processes probably for these products or what I call productized services, because you're offering a predefined service, aren't you? So you're able to really say, well, this is what's included. And in behind the scenes, you've got the system set up to really streamline the delivery so that the cost is lowered to you, but at the same time, the client gets an excellent customer experience because you're following a process to deliver their service, and they also get the benefit of a reduced or a fixed cost.
You're absolutely spot on. Yeah. So you've done everything you can in the background to optimize that. And so you're well placed to provide that service. And so, yeah, it's really sort of a win for clients, but also for the businesses like ours and like yours that are providing those services, because you've sort of optimized and you've made it as efficient as it can possibly be to deliver that service. And it's partly about the sort of efficiency and the cost impact that has, but there's also a time benefit. You know, for clients, it means rather than waiting for that, 3 month project to complete, you're already sort of 90% on sort of day one that you started up. So it's rather, it is a change in mindset, like you were sort of mentioning earlier. It requires people who see the value in investing time in doing that. And it goes away from wanting to treat everything as a sort of the artisan approach to law, as I describe it, where you treat everything as a unique once in a lifetime problem, because there's very few problems that our clients are dealing with that are like that. Most of them have parallels to other things we've seen. And if we can sort of leverage that into products, then as you say, it's that win-win for both the firms, but also for the clients.
And I think when you really start to unpack it and you start to design products and you start to work out what the systems will be for service delivery, you realize that there's actually far less of that bespoke artisan, as you call it, than you initially think when you get started. Yes, there's always variables. There's always going to be variables. You're always dealing with different people with different circumstances or different businesses. But there's only kind of a limited scope of variables. And within that scope, your clients will probably fall into 3 or 4 categories of variable. So it's actually not all that different after all. And if you're able to work out what's gone before and then how you can use that to benefit the people who come next, like you said, it's win-win. Everybody wins. You win and the clients.
Yeah, absolutely. Spot on.
Your pricing for these services, you've mentioned that you are using a subscription model. Are they all on subscription? Do you have fixed prices or value pricing for any others, or is all your clients on a subscription basis?
Yeah, so we've got a real mix, and this is not just across the products, but in terms of our on-site and advisory work as well. So we've got a real mix. A lot of our sort of on-site or embedded work is essentially based on a daily billing method, because people in that sort of instance are essentially an extension of the client's team. The advisory work, we do a lot of milestones or fixed price work. And that includes on some of the really sort of large projects will be, you know, we might sort of start off with a milestone to cover the scoping phase of the project. And then we'll have estimates of the milestones for the following phases. But in the first phase, we'll firm up the scope so that you can confirm the milestone or fixed price amounts for those subsequent phases. And then on the product side of things, it depends a bit on the product. Some are subscription, like you pay a sort of monthly subscription for an example, like the optics product or platform that I was talking about. Whereas others, yeah, there are sort of fixed price, particularly where they're that services-based one, or a combination. So some are a fixed price where a component of the service is that sort of uplifting capability or solve initial problem, but then there might be a sort of recurring services fee or a subscription piece, which is the maintenance once you've kind of solved that problem, but you don't want to be in that case like some clients find themselves where they then things slowly sort of deteriorate over time because there's not someone with that constant eye on it or watching it. So yeah, it just depends a little bit on which services, but we use all of those. And we sort of really like that because it gives you the ability to align the pricing model with what's reflective of the value to the client. But it's not without its challenges because then you've got to have a billing system internally and all those things that are flexible enough to accommodate that. And I don't know if you sort of experienced this, but we found along the way that a lot of the default law firm software or packages don't really accommodate the way that we want to do things as a business, which is, you know, that meant that we sort of got to look in other market segments to find a platform that works for us, or in some cases sort of develop that internally.
Yeah, we had the same issue and did the same thing. We've developed our own practice management software. So what solution did you find? Have you found something that kind of fits the bill, or have you done the same? I mean, you mentioned you've developed some things internally. What software are you using in your firm?
Yeah, we're sort of using a real mix of things. Where we can, we always like to use the general sort of available sort of market tools because if someone's created a tool already, there's no point reinventing the wheel. So we use a lot of the sort of, like I mentioned, sort of BI product. We do a lot on top of a Microsoft product called Power BI. For practice management at the moment, we use a lot of things that we've developed internally, but we are sort of actually in a project at the moment to sort of look at our core systems. And it's back to that sort of always restless and saying, are we doing as well as we can be? And we sort of feel like we've outgrown that. So our group manager of technology is currently running a process to say, what are our sort of primary core systems and how to replace that? And yeah, all of those things, I think, yeah, to be in a growing and a business, you've got to sort of enjoy that challenge in a way. Like you never sort of seem to get comfortable. You know, you've just done one thing and then you're already on to the next thing. And
absolutely. You know,
in recruitment, that's a real focus for us because some people absolutely love that. And for some people, that's just like a nightmare proposition that, you know, you can't just kind of get comfortable and get used to doing things, that it's always going to be changing. So you've got to find people that are a good fit for you. And so we spend a lot of time sort of talking to people that this is what we're like as an organization. And you can see some people sort of their eyes are wide open and they sort of light up about that. And other people, you can just tell that it's not going to be the sort of organization that suits them.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that too. And I often, even like you say, with systems, I kind of get to an end point, or, you know, end point, inverted commas, to the extent that there is one, I get to an end point. And sometimes it's almost straight away when I think, actually, we can do better than that. And it's straight onto the redesign process. And for some people, that would be hard and a challenge and exhausting and, you know, too much change. But for others, the change is really important and other people thrive on that change, and that's what keeps them motivated and engaged. So I relate to that point too. Sean, what's one piece of advice that you would give to somebody who wants to do law differently?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I think the first thing is that you've got to be prepared to sort of take a chance and give it a go. I mean, I think there's a lot of people with sort of great ideas and they never take that first step. So sometimes it's just being prepared to sort of take that first step and take a chance. And, you know, I've had a lot of people say to me over the years, you know, you left, you know, one of the sort of big global firms and, you know, to start a new business, and surely that felt risky. But I don't think it did, in a sense, because for most of us, we stop and reflect. If we've got some runs on the board in your career, you're probably always going to be able to go back to that. So I always felt like I could return to that world if I wanted to. You know, the way things have panned out, I've sort of had no interest in doing that. But so sometimes it can feel daunting, but maybe if you sort of stop and think about it a bit more, you realize that it wouldn't be hard to sort of return to that sort of alternative way of doing things if you wanted to. So it's really about sort of taking that first step, I think. But The other, I think, a really sort of important attribute is having a sort of degree of resilience, because not everything will happen day one and come on day one. And so you've got to be, I guess, prepared to sort of ride the roller coaster of these things. And, you know, sometimes you'll have wins and sometimes you'll leave thinking, you know, I wish I hadn't have tried that way. Or, you know, you'll enjoy the sort of successes of a client that really sort of understands what you're offering and is super excited about that and, you know, becomes a long-term client. And then you'll have others where, you know, you lose a tender or a pit. So you've got to have that sort of degree of resilience, I think, as well. So yeah, that'd probably be my two things. Yeah, you just give it a go if that's what interests you, but then be prepared to stick it out even when occasionally you feel like things haven't gone your way.
Yeah, I think that last point, especially about resilience, is really, really valuable advice. I like to focus on this podcast, especially on the positives. And so I guess as part of that, it can be easy to kind of downplay some of the negatives or the difficulties that come with running a business. And I probably don't touch on that enough, actually, especially given hearing your advice has made me kind of contemplate that a bit more, because it can be a real roller coaster ride and it's not always easy. And yes, we get to sit here and talk about the fun stuff, the systems and the processes and how much we love people and those types of issues. But there are challenges that come along with it as well. And like you say, developing the resilience and being able to pick yourself up and say, it's not all going to be, you know, rainbows and unicorns. There is going to be some challenges along the way. I think that's really, really valuable advice. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. I also think that, you know, it helps to be sort of grounded in a set of values in those times. So if you know why you're doing what you're doing, then it's easier to be resilient, I think, in some ways. And having a collection of key values that you can turn to really sort of guide your decision making and what you do in both the good times and the times that are those sort of harder, more challenging times, I think is really useful and important. And for us, when we established the firm, you know, one of the things we're really keen to do was have, you know, we sort of heard, you know, you go to a lot of sort of these law firm events and it'll all be, you know, clients, clients, clients. But we sort of wanted to have a, you know, something more akin to the triple sort of bottom line approach, which was, you know, a combination of what's right for clients, what's right for staff, but also we're all in a pretty fortunate position, you know, what's right for the kind of communities we're in. And sometimes, you know, even having that sort of underpinning can really help when you are in those challenging times, because you can sort of remember, well, why are we doing this? And you can sort of reflect on some of the positive things you've been able to do in your local communities for the year. So I think resilience is an attribute, but it's also something that you can build on by understanding why you're doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Sean. Please tell us where listeners can go to find out more about you or about Proximity.
So to find out more about Proximity, our website's probably the best starting point. So we're proximity.com.au. Yeah, so jump on there and have a look. And one of the things we sort of regularly get feedback on, which is sort of pretty fun and makes it worth a look, is our sort of staff profiles have both the combination of people's corporate photo, but then it sort of flips to show them doing what their interest is.
I did see that.
And so I don't know if you saw that when you had website. So we get a lot of comments about that. So that'll also give people a sense of who I am personally and what I do. So yeah, website's a good starting point for that.
Brilliant. We will send people there. And of course, I'll include all the links in the show notes as well. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks again for tuning in to Doing Law Differently. If you enjoyed the episode, I'd love you to leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find out about the show, and I love hearing what you think. Otherwise, if you're not on Apple Podcasts, send me a message and let me know. You can find all the past episodes at doinglawdifferently.com.au.